Hello, I'm Michael Heyman, and you're listening to Changemakers. My guest today is Nana Badu, the social enterprise founder on a mission to empower young people through sports and mentoring. With Badu Sports and the Badu community, he's working with 5,000 Londoners a year and is backed by Nike, the Mayor of London, and the innovation centre Plexel at Here East on the Olympic Park. Today's Changemaker story is all about steps in the right direction, new skills to unleash potential, and the motivation to make the most of life. And he has a top tip, which is simply this, that the dream is free. The hustle is sold separately. Nana, welcome to Changemakers. Let's start with that top tip. Tell us all about the dream. Tell us all about the hustle.
Yeah, just thank you very much for having me, first of all, on this program. Honored. But yeah, it's just lives and its lessons and things that you're not told about. So as a child and as a young person, you were told all these ambitions and things that you can dream of becoming and possibly be, but no one tells you the difficulties of the journey and the work that's behind it, which could be a stumbling block or a block to every people. So I always want to make sure that I remind myself and every person that I come against to say it's fine, it's fantastic to dream, we should do that, but be aware that we have to work for that dream.
And what a dream and what a life. I mean, you arrived in London age 10 from Ghana. You set up Badu Sports in 2008. You've got a story that we will go into, but what an outcome in terms of the organization that you've created and the thousands of lives that you are inspiring through sports and mentoring. Tell us a little bit about the organization, first of all.
So Badu is a sports, it's an organization that uses sports as a vehicle to educate, empower, but most importantly, it's uplift young people from some of our most challenging and not even deprived, but pushed out communities. I like to use the word pushed out because it's access that they don't have or what they've not been told about. So,
and bring that to life for us in terms of when you talk about a pushed out community, just explain that, sort of bring it to the, I guess to the listeners in terms of the people that you are meeting and the lives that they're leading.
So the people that we work with are just normal, regular people, but it's just the access, information, support, resources are so diminished and not given to them appropriately as they should be. And so therefore their choices or their lived experiences or their expectations in life are lowered, like hugely. I almost look at the fact that growing up in... coming to London and growing up in East London, like you were always offered the thing that everyone could has to fight for. So football was one of the sports that everyone's given. And knowing that there's one in 20,000 who probably makes it to an academy, and knowing the variety of sports, why are we all offered the one thing that we all have to scrap over, knowing very well only one of us are going to make that and the rest of us will be back on systems of poverty and struggle.
And we'll move on to the sport in a minute. But I mean, your background was a single parent household, three siblings. You spent a lot of years away from your parents in isolation, often homeless. I mean, that lived experience for yourself. At what point did you realize that you had agency and empowerment to take control of your life and actually build the building blocks that you have gone on to do? At what point did you start to feel that there was a future that you could build from what on the face of it looked like a very unpromising and difficult set of circumstances?
I mean, you're right. Everything in my background or my upbringing or everything in most of the young people, family that we work with, it's almost set to make you fail. It's almost set against you to not thrive. You're just in a constant survival mode. Really and truly, I got personally sick and tired of having to work 10 or 15 times harder and still having the door shut on my face and still not being supported, people finding lots of different excuses. So every excuse that was given, I tried to find a different way around it. The thing for me is the consistency and the people that you meet along your journey. So trying to understand that there are different scopes. Sports was one of the key things because I met different people from different walks of life. I spoke to them and they spoke differently. And I think that was the start of the turning point. I was like, well, why are you dreaming or not or thinking or thriving for this? And my thriving mentality is to eat the next day, but you're thinking about building houses and, you know, having holidays and going and having a family. But my mindset was just, how am I going to eat tomorrow? Like, how is that fair when we're walking and playing in the same team and wearing the same shirt and I'm getting the accolades. So that was the change, was just the consistency of seeing people and having people around me who wanted more.
I also read that sport was where you felt praised, included, and valued in terms of an experience. Why was that?
We all know, like, the system, there are certain biases within the system and how children are treated. I'm a black man, a black boy from Africa, and my expectations are lowered. Sitting still and nicely in a classroom is my sticker point, it's my win point. Whereas in sports, I had to do something. I had to show a skill, and I was praised based on my skill, not my color, not my, you know, my ability to be nicely and not be a threat. It's just that I had a skill and I was good at it. And I think that's where sports was that place of belonging. I'm there because I earned it. I'm there because I'm valued. I'm there because I'm wanted. And that makes a huge difference in what you wanting to live and make a difference in your life.
And of course, that idea and that ideal about sports has been the inspiration for Badu Sports and I guess the Badu community in terms of sport as the metaphor and I guess the sort of the pathway for people to actually feel empowered, feel included, and feel valued.
Absolutely. Sports is such an amazing tool because there is something for everyone. And there is an opportunity for you to find out who you are, what you want to be within that field. It's an instant impact, sports is, because you turn up and you learn and then you are able to do. And it could be that within a split five.
Do you have to be good at sports?
No.
It works for everyone, does it?
It does. It does, because you come in and you can be the person who analyzes the game and see things very quickly, or you can be the person that creates and design how we look or how we feel. You can be the inspiration that, you know, we had when we had some of our teams and some of the young people to just turn up and they were the selectors for the music. They knew what type of music will bring the mood into the atmosphere. All those things are intricate for the person who decided what kit or equipment we needed to have. You don't have to be great at sports or good at sports or be an elite. There are things around that metric of sport to inspire everyone. Everyone belongs.
Right. I mean, that belonging, I guess, is important. But that motivation to act was also drawn, I was reading, from quite a negative experience in terms of witnessing a crime in Stratford. Tell us a little bit about that in terms of what happened and what it inspired you to do.
I mean, one of the key things for me is seeing how the media is portraying all young people, especially people that look like myself, about what they're doing and why they're doing it.
And how do they portray it, Nana? How do you think they portray it?
It's always of a negative, even without slightly saying it. But you can say crime happened this time and the stats of crime go up. And then lo and behold, there's a black group of kids in the background. If someone gets stabbed or killed or so on, you would get doctor whatsoever who comes in pristinely dressed white person, and then you get the black former gang member to talk about their experiences. It's just like we've got no one within our communities or so on. So it's just the negative connotations of young people, like they're all standing from a negative point. That is so wrong. It's a small few that need that support, who are finding that belonging, who've been disregarded by society, who formed their own belonging. But yeah, so the incident in Stratford was just very apparent to me, because I remember I just got injured and I'm coming off the bus, walking through Stratford, the old Stratford station, shopping center. And a group of boys were chasing another boy, and I think he must have fell. I got there a little bit late and I think they've stabbed him. And then you know, I had a strap on my leg. I had my crutches, and I'm trying to help him with the bleeding. And another woman was calling the ambulance and police and so on. Then two of the boys came back, and they were so remorseful and sorry. And they weren't the ones who actually delivered the blow, but they just thought they were just chasing this person, being lads, and didn't know that one or two people within their group was going to do this. But the sheer look on their faces and the horror that has happened, it just seemed like they couldn't turn around from that point on. They were just in, they were children. And I was just like, right, someone needs to give them somewhere else to belong. Why is that group their only option? What is happening around that?
Yeah, I mean, and I was reading that was that, you know, that you were saying that if gangs are where you feel you belong and where you feel included, then there's no accident why gangs will be so popular. So I guess what you've done is to create community and inclusion in a very different and positive way through sport.
It's options. It's option as well. And it's option about seeing yourself in a different light. So we talked about the media and how it portrays what you're meant to look like. So try spending every day of your life not being a criminal, or trying not to look like a criminal, try not to look like a problem. That is mentally breaking. That is like every day. So you're walking around with one ball in your hand, and if you drop it, then that's it, you failed. So for us, it's just creating an option and giving a different image of what you can be and what you are really, not what the media portrays. So creating that within a society, within a community, that you come out your front door and you see the black boy or the black woman or someone who's going to work and who's doing, you know, who is positive, who's not like what you're seeing on TV. It's not true. Like you can be any and everything that you want to be. You can dream to be that, but it's just, let's work through the hustle. That is so separate. Let's work through what that is. What are the skills you have? How do we create that different element of belonging?
And it would be a mistake for listeners to think that where you're trying to channel people is to sporting outcomes, because I was looking here that 85% of the young people that go through bad esports go on to university. So actually, you know, that there is a, you know, this is about finding pathways in lots of different directions, I guess. And I suppose that also brings into start focus the point that you made about the kind of like the elite nature of football academies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the thriving mindset that sports is the key vehicle as well, which I think the either media or government or policies makers use as a deterrent to keep all these mass people living in poverty engaged in some sort of way for a little bit of time. They also use it, and academies use it as a way of giving that opportunity as a carrot for all of you guys to come in, and you can one day be a Wayne Rooney, or, you know, change your outcome to Raheem Sterling and so on. And that's not always the case. So for us, we grabbed hold of that ball and wanted to try and engage and look at all the things around that you had a skill and give you that empowerment to say, right, we're not all going to make it as footballers, and you're going to get rejection, but look at all the other skills and things you adopt. But also, let's find out what you're good at. So if you're coming in going, sir, I've created this new logo and it's going to be great for the team, that's you. That's graphics. That's you going away. And so let's explore that. And what within the university, what other jobs that applies to these things? For us, we had to go with sports, and sports was easy to kind of get involved in within schools, because here's a black man coming in saying he's going to do sports, and schools are happy to open the door to us to help with behavior engagement. But our engagement is that through that sports.
Is it all sports or is it just football, or where do you...
No, it's all sports. It's we have to, we like from gymnastics to swimming teachers to just, because every child, if you've got a child, 30 kids in the class, like you said, not everyone is going to feel like they belong in a particular sports or feel like they're good enough. So you have to have the variety of multi-sports and teach differently. So we teach PE, when we use all the aspects of PE to kind of find something for you that you feel like, and that moment of like, oh my gosh, I did that, this was amazing for me. It's just that way we want to hold on to, as that building block. And it's always going, remember when you did this, remember when you did that.
Now, you've said in the past, when you're bored, you go looking for trouble. This has been a year where we've faced lockdown, we've faced the COVID-19 virus. How bored are young people? Have they been? And how much trouble has there been as a result of that? And how has that been I guess, for your organization where movement and connection becomes that much more difficult?
It is true. Like, if you don't have any other options, then like any person, not even just young people, just any person, if you are bored, you are looking for the next thing. That, I mean, I think we call it midlife crisis when we get to a certain age and so on. So for young people, very much it's looking at, it's been difficult during COVID. There was no information or real access and opportunity given to them. Particularly the teenagers, like, people seem to forget when we talk about children and young people, we always engage very much on the very youngest one. My biggest concern during COVID was very much the teenagers, who a lot of them look after themselves, because their parents are trying their hardest to try and, like, you know, pay the bills and carry on and survive. And most often is, if you're bored and you're looking out, or you're going to play football and you've got no access, there is one guarantee that's out there and are constantly out there looking to have you in their group. And it's not always the positive engagement. So for us, it's, we needed to be out there. We needed to create things and provide opportunities for them to engage in other aspects. So our mentoring groups was very prominent. Our food bank aspect was very prominent. Our mental health lines were very prominent. And engaging that many young people in delivery of food and access and support for the community, that was the engagement. That was the thing that made them feel like, wow, I belong, I'm needed, I'm valued, I'm wanted.
I mean, and we mentioned it, I mean, you've got some high-powered supporters in Plexal here, East, the mayor, Nike. I mean, it's a great sort of, it's a great back line for you. Has that allowed you to get, I was going to sort of say go and score some goals, but I mean, you know, that would be, that. But I mean, how's that support empowered you to make the difference, do you think?
I think not as directly as I hope, and obviously everyone will always want more because I'm an ambitious person, but they have been amazing. I think it's just, for me, it's looking at how they look at the world and what they're thinking next. So for me, thinking way before this, having all these people looking at me, I wanted to help an area, a group. Now I'm like, this can be literally scaled up to the maximum. And I think that's what the inspiration of working with the Nikes and the, like, the global magnet and access that they have, the understanding of that scaling up, that corporate mindset of making sure we can build as a collective and have bigger, better. It's what the inspiration is mostly had for me. And I mean, it's great to have their name and access and that support, and even just being aligned with those people.
Your ambition, I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, it's what makes you the entrepreneur in terms of, I mean, it really comes across interviewing you and reading about you, is that the positivity and optimism in terms of actually making a difference. I mean, I wonder how you view this year, this world where we've seen, you know, we've seen the Black Lives Matter marches, we've seen change. I mean, some people view this as being reflective of the fact that actually things are just woeful. Some people view this as the beginning of a great reset, that actually things are actually in the process of changing. When you look at the world in 2020 that you're living in, giving what you want to achieve, how do you see it?
I think when I look at the world and what we're living in currently in 2020 is that people now had no option but to stop still and look. That was the biggest difference, because a lot of people, the things that are happening now in the marches and so on, these were the direct narratives that brings people, especially from my community, into the disregard. So this was an opportunity for the world in 2020 to stop looking away or changing the channel because you were uncomfortable with the conversation, or changing the conversation because you had no option than to look. And it digged into every single person, whether white, black, or whatsoever. Your humanity, that innate thing about humanity, you had to witness a person get killed live. But it wasn't just the person dying. It was the fact that the person that was doing it had a nonchalance, disregard that was okay, because the world thought it was okay, and this is what 2020 has allowed. I think the reflection and allowing the world to look and start noticing. And it's strange that it's taken this long for people to even be surprised that this is going on. But it's, but for me, I'm not going to change what has been set out. My whole thing has always been about inclusion and access and equality for all, white, black, whatsoever, and we need to keep pushing that. And
but I suppose the question I would ask you is that how does a positive person view this position right now? Do you view the fact that actually things are getting better and you're and you can see the change, you can see the progress, or do you see the fact that, you know, which is equally true, I guess, that people have short memories, that, you know, there will be a point where we're in a post-COVID age and actually things can go back to the way they were quite quickly? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense of where you are on that kind of axis in terms of how you feel about the next chapter for us all in terms of, is it going to be a better, fairer world that we're going to live in?
I'm hoping it would be. I'm hoping it would be because I feel positive as always, and you have to be positive. I think the sheer fact that more people know and are listening, no one could now pretend they didn't know. So I'm positive about the possible aspects of future. And I think things might change. We've just got to keep on the conversation. We've got to keep asking the right question about what people are doing. And we've also got to ensure that anyone that's pledging during the movement and saying that they want to do it and they want to be allies and so on, we're holding them accountable for it as well. No longer can we just accept that, oh yes, I posted something and I wrote a fantastic statement from a corporate's point of view. This is now looking at the access and then digging deep into saying, well, if we haven't got inclusion and diversity within our organizations, why not? And having those questions, well, is it because they're not getting the access to be trained? So let's start from scratch. Let's work with younger people. So that's where, but I'm positive because I think there's more of that happening. And I'm hoping that keeps at it.
So let's go back to sport. We've got a shared admiration for someone who was a proven winner, a proven performance expert, Sir Alex Ferguson. Leading is the book that you've recommended for your lockdown reading list. I once heard him speak and he said, I never played for a draw in my life. And that was really at the heart of his philosophy, was that you always had to go for the win. Is that how you see him? Is that how you see life?
I mean, so yeah. I mean, I'm an Arsenal fan, so let's not say this too loud. But just you cannot disregard greatness, and you cannot disregard someone who quietly went about doing what they needed to do, and used their own lived experiences and their personality to almost build something that is of a mindset of just a thriving, winning, fighting mindset, and to create change. And the biggest thing for me with Sir Alex Ferguson, there was so much about his upbringing, which wasn't the silver spoon, higher class element, but it's very much of, it's fought and worked for everything that he has. And I think that the quote that he says about, you know, you never play for a draw, it sticks really close to me, because if you're just on this as a passenger, then you're complicit to the problem. You might as well go and shoot your shot. Yes, you might miss, but what if you win? What if you actually scored? What then happens? And that resonates with me. So yes, don't turn up for a draw. Like, there's no points.
I mean, one of my recent guests was Matthew Flamini. And the thing he was saying to me was that actually on the other side of that is that also you've got to turn losing into the experience as well. Is that, and I mean, I suppose as an Arsenal fan, you'll know a lot about that. That's a joke, obviously, Matthew. And anyway, that's, but I mean, although not so much recently with the Charity Shield, but I suppose the question is that, you can't win all the time, you don't lose all the time. You've got to learn from both, have you?
Absolutely. And I think that's just it. Like, if you go in and you lost, then you learn from what you've lost from and how to improve. If you go in and won, then you also learn from that. Like, but if you drew, like, what have you gained from that? You just turned up. That's all. Like, you've not. And I totally agree. And I think the new aspects of Arsenal and what's happening, they're just more courageous, more daring. And so what if we lose? We've learned from that and we'll come back next time and be better. But better to go off and actually try and shoot your shot than worry about missing and not trying at all.
Well, I think we'll take that one as being in the back of the net. And that's a 3-point interview, if you don't mind me saying, Nana. Thank you very much for joining me. And my thanks go there to Nana Badu, an entrepreneur who is taking the challenges of his childhood and turning them into opportunities for a new generation. And you know what? It's inspired a dream that he can make a difference. And he's turned that into a very vibrant reality in his work with Badu Sports and the Badu community. And for more stories of inspiration from people on a mission, join me next time.